This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Ultimately, what was the difference in this game, Chris?
I think the difference is that the Celtics did some things in the first half that the Cavs weren't fully prepared for, and the Celtics, their defensive strategy, took the Cavs offense out of their rhythm. You know, the Cavs entered the game, Amy, with the number one offense in the NBA, and they just didn't look the part in the first half. And I think when you play against a team like the Celtics and you dig that kind of hole and you're out of rhythm for that long of a stretch, it's just a little bit too much to ask to try and come back and erase that entire deficit. I think the Cavs deserve a ton of credit for the way that they fought. It would not have been fitting for it to end that kind of way, the streak to end that kind of way with a whimper, non-competitive against their biggest threat in the Eastern Conference, the team that is the reigning NBA champions. They've made some adjustments at the half, but by that time, it was too little too late against that caliber opponent.
Largest deficit was 21 points. So how did you see them fight, scratch, claw to the point at which it was at least a one possession game?
It started with some adjustments that they made in the second half, Amy. They started really attacking mismatches after the Celtics switched everything on the defensive end of the floor. So they started hunting the kind of matchup that they wanted. They allowed Darius Garland to attack off the dribble, Donovan Mitchell to attack off the dribble. Evan Mobley was great in the third quarter. So I think they had a level of recognition of the things that the Celtics were doing defensively in the first half, and they made the adjustments that were necessary in the third quarter, and they had a 40-point third quarter, which is more like the Cavs than the 20-point first quarter that they had. I mean, that first quarter against Boston, Amy, that was their fourth lowest scoring quarter all season long. So that was just very uncharacteristic for them. But they made the adjustments that they needed to make. In the second half, they found some matchups that they really liked, that they felt like they could exploit. I thought they were a little bit more physical on the defensive end of the floor in the second half as well, played with the requisite intensity that this kind of game called for, and they worked their way back into it. And the other thing is Donovan Mitchell was great in the second half. Mm-hmm. He wasn't as good at the start of the game, but he started to find some space. He started to find his rhythm, and he was great in the second half, and he almost willed them back.
If you didn't watch the game and you only looked at the stat sheet and saw the deficit in the number of threes, minus 12 in that category, the Celtics shooting the lights out, a lot of teams just fold up at that point. Even without the three, the Cavs were able to pull themselves back in and withstand that onslaught.
Yeah, there's no doubt, Amy, but it's something that I think that the Cavs are going to have to figure out moving forward in this particular matchup. Because if we go back to the Eastern Conference semifinals last year, the last time the Cavs actually lost a game over the last 6 months was to this same Boston team. And one of the things that Celtics head coach Joe Mazzulla talked about following that series was that it just became a math equation. And the Cavs were so reliant on their inside game and so reliant on Evan Mobley. He was scoring inside, but the Celtics weren't all that worried about it because they believed that they were going to win the math equation. They were going to be able to shoot and take more threes and make more threes than the Cavs. So the Cavs talked about that coming into this game. Part of it is it's just a different roster construct. Evan Mobley and Jared Allen are going to play inside around the rim, not perimeter players the way that the Celtics are. So they're going to have to find a different kind of formula, I think, Amy, against this particular Boston team. To try and negate that math equation or flip it a little bit more favorable to the Cavs. 29 threes is not enough for a team like the Cavs that believe that they should be taking more threes. They have interior matchups that were favorable for them with both Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. But there's enough talent, there's enough three-point shooting on this team to hoist more than that. 29 is not a number that the Cavs are going to be comfortable with moving forward.
Chris Fedor is with us from Boston, covers the Cavs and the NBA in this big matchup, part of the NBA Cup, so that crazy green court. We grew up in New England. My mom definitely does not like it, but it lets you know that it's an NBA Cup game. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So, Chris, the game from Darius Garland was a tough one, obviously. They also don't end up having Caris LeVert in this game. Without those two pieces, what are they missing?
Yeah, it's not just Caris LeVert either, Amy. It's four of their top 11 projected rotation players that they were without tonight against Boston. And that's part of the reason why the Cavs felt that they played well in this game against the Celtics, and they were proud of their fight, and they were proud of their effort, and they didn't really have their heads hung, and they didn't really have slumped shoulders, because they looked at this and say, oh, wait a minute, we are missing four of our key guys here tonight. And we were right there with Boston, despite the fact that they buried us below an avalanche of threes. So there was like a feeling after the game from the Cavs of like, hey, we can match up with this team. We can probably beat this team if we play our game, if we don't get caught up in their style. When they didn't have Isaac Okoro, they didn't have Caris LeVert, they didn't have Dean Wade, they didn't have Max Strus. Like, those are four guys that theoretically give them a better fighting chance on the defensive end of the floor against the likes of Jason Tatum, Drew Holiday, Derek White, Jaylen Brown. The Cavs had to use a starting lineup that they haven't used all season long, putting Sam Merrill into that starting lineup. Like I said, they didn't have as much on the defensive end of the floor to match up with Boston's wings, and they lost a little bit of playmaking without Caris LeVert. Caris is somebody who historically has played well against the Celtics because stylistically he likes to get up and down. Stylistically, he likes to break the paint. Stylistically, he likes to hunt switches and take guys off the dribble. He's a really good ISO player. So not having those guys, yeah, the Cavs felt that tonight against the Celtics, just like the Celtics felt not having Kristaps Porzingis, because every time, you know, the Celtics went with Kita in the game, you know, the Cavs relentlessly attacked him. That was a matchup that they considered favorable. So neither team tonight is the team that they're probably going to be April, May, if these teams meet again. And I think you felt that on both sides of it.
Before the game, I saw this quote from Kenny Atkinson, which I thought was interesting. We want feedback. That was his answer to what he hoped to get out of this game in part. What does that mean?
I think it means even though they had won 15 straight games to start the season, they're still collecting their own data. What works, what doesn't work. And in this kind of matchup, right, it's one thing to see offensive success and all these different changes that they've implemented since Kenny arrived with their ball movement, with their style, with their principles. It's one thing to get that validation and see it work against Chicago, Charlotte, New Orleans. This is the Celtics. Right. This is probably the biggest threat that the NBA has seen since the dynastic Golden State Warriors. Mm. Like, they are that level good against this particular team, a team that the Cavs have a ton of respect for. And they know how difficult this matchup is for them. They wanted to see, like, are they going to stick to those principles or are they going to revert to bad habits? What kinds of things can we do offensively in terms of lineups and combinations that are going to work? So it's just collecting all that kind of data and figuring out more things about themselves moving forward when they get into these types of matchups. Because the Cavs have said it, Amy, over and over and over again. There is a bigger picture in play. They are talking championship in Cleveland. It's something that President of Basketball Operations Coby Altman said for the first time in the post-LeBron era. So there's a bigger picture in play here. And they're trying to improve internally as the season goes on. And they're trying to continue to ascend so they're at their best when springtime rolls around. And all these kinds of matchups against this caliber opponent, seeing what works, what doesn't work, what lineup combinations work, which ones don't, how much can we play Evan Mobley and Jared Allen together, all those different things are really, really informative for the Cavs moving forward.
It's like the Cavs version of AI. I like it. That type of information. Chris Fedor is with us from Boston, covers the Cavs and the NBA for Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. How much talk was there about the 15-0 start, or even as the wins were piling up, about them not having lost a game?
Oh, man, they downplayed it as it was going on, as you would expect coaches and players to. But, like, Donovan Mitchell was fighting to not miss the game over the weekend against Charlotte because he didn't want that to be the one that they were going to lose. So the Cavs wanted to be a part of history, of course. If you're a competitor, if you have that within your grasp or you feel like it's within your grasp, you want to continue to chase it. You want to be a part of that. You want to have that opportunity. It was meaningful to them. There's no doubt. Every player in that locker room knew the number 24, the record set by the Golden State Warriors. And I don't think it was a case, Amy, where they were looking ahead to the schedule and they were like, oh, man, if we're going to get to 25 and we're going to break the Warriors' record, that means we have to beat Boston twice. We have to beat Denver. And then the 25th win would be on the road against Miami, a place where we never win. Like, I don't think it got to that point, but they wanted these games, and they were trying to continue this winning streak for as long as they possibly could. And it was fun while it lasted, and they played really, really good basketball during that stretch. But the times that they said, you know, it's not on our mind, that was a complete and utter lie, because it was.
Kenny Atkinson has certainly implemented the new offense. We've talked about that. He's changed the way that these guys operate together on the court. But off the court, in the locker room, what does he bring to the table as a leader?
I think the thing that he has brought, Amy, is more of a looseness. And I think there's a recognition on his behalf. And it's something that maybe J.B. Bickerstaff didn't recognize as much because he had to take them through the rebuild. He had to take them through the dark times. And he never really switched the mentality of, this is no longer a rebuilding team. Like, this is a team that is a legitimate contender. And I think sometimes he treated a team that they, in that locker room, thought they were good enough and believed they should have had, you know, big-time aspirations and expectations. At times, it felt like JV was kind of treating them like they were still going through that rebuild. But with a fresh set of eyes and a new perspective, Kenny has brought more of a looseness. And I think it's something that he learned from Golden State, being around Steve Kerr. You don't have to take everything so seriously. You can have fun. You can play music, right? You can do trivia nights, something that the Cavs have done. You can play two-hand touch to finish a practice with a football. Like, all these different kinds of things to try and make it more of a fun environment. Because 82 games is a grind, and this schedule can wear on you. And you just have to break from the monotony of what the day-to-day can become in today's NBA. And there's a joy in that locker room. There's a looseness, like I said, in that locker room. It doesn't mean that they're not business-like, and it doesn't mean that they don't have high expectations, but there's just a different vibe around this team with Kenny coming from Golden State. There's a lot of Warriors influence both on and off the court when it comes to the Cavs.
And considering the Cavaliers-Warriors history, how are fans embracing this team and this new coach?
Oh my God, Amy, they love this team. The style is one that they've been calling for the last couple of years. They're less predictable on the offensive end of the floor. It's not so much reliance on the pick and roll. A lot of selflessness, a lot of sacrifice, a lot of ball movement, making the extra pass. It's not just Donovan carrying them to what was a 15-0 record coming into tonight's game against the Celtics. This is November. This is a football town in Cleveland.
Right.
This is supposed to be Brown season, right? There was a Sunday game that they played just recently against the Charlotte Hornets. Like, no offense to Charlotte, but that is a lottery-bound team that is not anywhere close to the Cavs' level. And Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse was rocking because they have embraced this team. They have put their arms around this team, and it has kind of given a palate cleanser for the terrible Brown season that went off the rails a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, it made November basketball fun when it's usually not this level of entertaining. It gave fans something to turn to with the Browns being a disaster. So they're on board with this team. They believe in this team. And I think this team has given this city hope. Even if it's not this year, the future's still bright, and a championship in some major sport is possible.
Before I let you go, one last question about Donovan Mitchell, because he predates Kenny. This is early in his third year with the Cavaliers. How did he find a home there in Cleveland?
I think part of it, Amy, is like the kind of superstar he is. He's a selfless superstar. He's a low maintenance superstar. There was this belief about Donovan that like he needed a big market, that he needed LA, Miami, New York, or something like that. He became Donovan Mitchell, you know, one of the best players in the NBA in Utah, right? He became Donovan Mitchell with a signature shoe from Adidas in Utah. So I think Donovan understands that he wants to be the face of the NBA. When LeBron is gone, when KD is gone, when Steph is gone, and they're looking for the next American-born superstar in the NBA, he wants it to be him. He's on record saying that. But I think he understands it's not about market. It's about winning. And I think he saw a future here in Cleveland, and he saw a roster here in Cleveland that he felt like he could grow with. Part of the reason why he re-signed was because of Evan Mobley and the future of Evan Mobley. You've got this young guy that he's going to grow alongside. Kenny Atkinson has matched the minutes, basically, of Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley. Donovan has empowered him. Donovan has elevated him. And he saw last year in the Eastern Conference semifinals on a court against the Celtics, future Hall of Famers, multi-time champions, all-stars, Evan be one of the best players in that series. And he said, you know, I can help him get to the next level, and he can help me with my game, making it easier for me. So that, to me, is part of the reason why Donovan's such a good fit in Cleveland. All that stuff that isn't specific to Cleveland doesn't matter all that much to him. He just wants to hoop, and he just wants to win. And he fits the mentality of the city. He's embraced the city. He goes to high school basketball games.
Oh, I love that.
He puts on Guardians jerseys. He smacks the guitar down before Browns games. So he fits in really, really well, not just on this team, not just in this organization, but in the city as well.
Well, you win in Cleveland, and sports fans will never forget you. You will be immortalized on the shores of Lake Erie. Yeah. All right, so Chris Fedor, you can find him online, F-E-D-O-R. He covers the Cavs, the NBA for Cleveland.com, the Plain Dealer. You can hear him on our Cleveland affiliate, 92.3, occasionally, though in season he is on the road. Thank you so much for a couple of minutes. I really appreciate it.
Amy, you got it. Anytime.